handle the truth.
Should we or should we not follow the advice of the galactically stupid?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
You are a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Clearly, don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Righteous Prick Podcast. I am your host, J.L. Covan. It is 11:16 a.m. Eastern on July 11th in the year of our Lord, 2022. I don't think I have work right now, but I'm taking a risk, guys. I'm taking a risk because I'm doing that thing where it's like usually I'm sort of like, all right, I'll email them for work. But now I'm like, well, I don't have anything right now. And how long can I lay low until they go, are you doing anything? Do you want to get fired? No, I was in a coma. Sick days? Do we have coma sick days? Anyway, so I figured I'd get this out of the way. We got Making Podcasts Great Again tonight at 8. So hopefully in the meantime, I'll be able to just continue reading and working out and not working today, but I have a feeling there's going to be work for me soon. But anywho, you guys don't listen to this to hear about the boring tedium of a mediocre lawyer. You hear about the enraged passions of a mediocre comedian. Business-wise, not talent-wise. Talent-wise, you're listening to a legend. Business-wise, you're listening to a borderline homeless person. Anywho, not a lot on the comedy front. Obviously, this week or next week is when I expect to hear an answer on part one of the 38-part saga of Half Blackface, which is, does the person who was willing to market it the first version, is that person satisfied enough with the product of the second version to then pitch it to platforms to try and get it sold? So, you know, this is, we're in the, if Half Blackface were a fetus, we are actually still in the range of when a Texas woman could abort it, but we are soon to get out of that level. So if the person says, yep, I want to edit this together and cut a deal to sell it, I will then go, okay, because this is it. This is the fifth Hail Mary of my career. And I thought after the first three were answered that, like, you know, hey, maybe this will happen. But then the October surprise, that's what they call it in elections. The October surprise is when, you know, Hillary's emails, like Anthony Weiner's computer having Hillary email stuff on it. That was the October surprise in 2016. The October surprise for me was, the cameras were shaking. But I didn't find out the October surprise until February. So in JL world, it was the February surprise. So that's really all I have to report, which is good. You know, unfortunately, as I, you know, I'm in Boston Friday. I think ticket sales have finally picked up now that I canceled one of the two shows. So hopefully that ends up being at least a little full room for one show. But, you know, with no real comedy gigs, I'm supposed to be in Morristown at the Mayo Performing Arts Center on August 19th, which is a Friday. So hopefully some Jersey fans show up to that. If they don't, it's okay. It's, you know, I think I get a fixed check regardless. But I will confirm that gig this week and then throw it up on the calendar with a ticket link on my website. But after Boston, there's really nothing. There is really, like, why did I qualify that? There's nothing on my calendar. I have a little spot in New York, a couple spots in New York, small, you know, which I'll put up on the calendar. But, you know, I don't expect people to show up to see me do like 12 minutes, but maybe they will. But I don't know. I guess I don't sound as miserable because it's sort of, maybe I'm at the acceptance phase of like, okay, I've vented enough to the Righteous Prick community. What else is there? You know, just keep trying to make some decent stuff. We've had a few new Patreon people. So thank you everybody who joined the Patreon. Much, much, much appreciated. If you haven't yet, book review goes up the book review, Jails Book Club goes up in, probably tomorrow. Well, I'm recording this Monday. So, you will hear this episode tomorrow if you listen right away. And also if you're a Patreon person or a Patreon interested person, new content going up tomorrow as well, Tuesday. That'll be the book. Very funny. I reviewed two books in this month's edition. And later in the month, there'll be the live chat, as always. But then I just got a custom-made Mitch McConnell apron. It's a bunch of turtles, and it says Chef Mitch on it from Etsy. What a sight Etsy is. You just get somebody to make you something custom for like $30. And you're like, really? Okay, great. That seems cheap, but thank you. Everybody is a Chinese elementary school factory worker, I guess, on Etsy. So it was very affordable and nice, funny touch for me to do Mitch cooking with Mitch McConnell. That'll be sort of the new exclusive series springing off of Mike Pence Gaming, which has been a moderate hit. So Mitch McConnell's cooking show will be the next thing. And I don't know what I'm doing with it yet. I just think it would be funny and to showcase one of the impressions that people really, really enjoy. Probably everything will be some sort of kale, lettuce, spinach based, just so you can have Mitch McConnell eating things like a turtle. But yeah, so check out the Patreon if you haven't yet. Thank you to everybody who has, but it's patreon.com/JLCAUVIN. The link will be in the bio. So we got Boston Friday. We got the Patreon slowly but surely picking up subscribers. So that's always a nice little pick me up. To see that, to feel validated for doing it in the first place. And what else is there before I just get to the meat of it? And then Half Blackface. I guess no news, in a weird way, no news is maybe not good news, but no news is not miserable, depressing monologues by JL News. How about that? But, you know, I'm writing a lot of new stuff. So the creative process is not dying, which is sad. I was kind of hoping I'd be drained of all creative juice by now, just because my big thing is always leaving jokes on the table, you know, like feeling like, well, Half Blackface is done, for better or worse. All my content is out there, you know, fans or future generations can discover it by accident and say, hey, this guy was pretty good. What happened to him? Oh, he died destitute and miserable. And alone. Well, I like his stuff. Where do like proceeds of royalties go now that he's gone? Oh, they go to Cookie, his dog. So she's eating a higher quality dog food. But yeah, he's not here anymore. But I'm sure he would have appreciated you. But only if you went to shows or bought stuff. He would not have liked you if you said you were a big fan and never did anything to indicate that you were a fan. He would have actually hated you. So, but you're saying you bought his album, so he, you know, so I can say with near certainty that he would have appreciated you. So yes, Cookie will be eating a higher grade of dog food thanks to you. So I think I'm safe to say he would appreciate it. Anywho, there's your morbid section of the podcast. But Half Blackface, I hope this month I have a positive answer. But like I said, that's only step one. Step one is get powerfully linked person in the comedy industry to agree to edit and promote and pitch to platforms. That's step one, and it's a hard step because, unfortunately, the first product was the one he was going to do, and I just hope the second one is as intriguing and funny and good, even if it's different in his eyes. But then becomes the harder step, which is still Near Impossible, which is like, can we sell this independently edited and produced thing to platforms that are basically doing almost all their work in-house? Now, the home run Hail Mary lottery ticket that I'm going for is basically the idea that Half Blackface is so perfect for this moment, threading the needle of cancel culture versus progressive values versus race and identity, plus incredibly funny stuff. This is not like the powerful, heartfelt monologue that will change. No, it's powerful, thoughtful, hilarious comedy. So, as you know, I still believe in it, even if I don't believe in the business. So, we'll see. So, hopefully in the next week or two, I have at least some good news to report to you. That would be cool. And then, my goal, as psychotic as this may sound, or masochistic, as I compile new material, the only problem I have right now is I have nowhere to run the new material. But I am very tempted, both out of spite and to cleanse the palate, that if I put together another 45 minutes within this year that I think I'm confident in, I may just pump out a self-produced, just to show you how it's done, a self-produced album called Person of Height. And we'll see. Boston will be the first test. Boston, I'll be doing like an hour and five of special material and that Boston people haven't heard yet. So I'm spoiling a little bit of the special, but not anything they've heard live. And the new stuff I've been writing. So I hope it's not a rough, it's not going to be rough. It's funny stuff, but it's not going to be ready for prime time in terms of polish, but I have to hear a lot of this new stuff now in front of a good crowd. And then I can, I think it would just be funny to be like, even if all my dreams come true with Half Blackface, to then just be like, oh, and a month after that was released on Showtime, he just self-produced a brand new 50 minutes, which is actually really strong stuff. Because I just, it's in my quest for comedy, if not immortality, at least relevance, I hate the idea of having a chunk of material, not like 5 minutes or 10 minutes, but having like, I got 50 minutes sitting there ready to go. And if I quit, that material will be heard by no one. At least I know material will be heard by 133 people if I release it now. But if I don't release it, it gets heard by no one. So that's my dilemma. If like I said, producing art, no matter how lowbrow or mundane it is, like I said, somewhere between immortality and relevance. And so that's why, as I keep writing stuff, I wish I could shut that off. But as I write things that I think are really funny, that I know are really funny, I think I've been doing this long enough to be like, that's the good thing, is that my rate of trial and success is like 85%. So if I write something down at this point with all my experience and my innate skills, I can bet on it usually being good. Not because I'm some, this is not something I did. This was not a true statement when I was 2 years in, but 19 years in, it's sort of like, yeah, I've done all these shows and all this material and all this varied content that I have a pretty good track record now of just knowing if I write it down and think it's funny, it's almost certainly funny. Not certainly, but almost certainly. Because there's still things that I try that don't work. So be it. So there's your comedy update, and I think I sound relatively upbeat because there's sort of a numbness now, I think. A sort of numbness that's just like, man, it is what it is. It took me a long time to get here again, but I hope for the best, expect the worst, and it usually lands up somewhere in between, shaded towards the worst. But also, I think my frustrations have been vented recently on, I've been playing Batman Arkham Knight, which is a 7-year-old game. It was the first game it was the reason I got PlayStation 4. And it's a very frustrating game. And it's at times very fun, at times very impressive, but at times, and half the time, super frustrating and just tedious. But I thought I was at the end. I thought I had to get one more boss before I could like activate the end of the game, but they want you to complete like at least 10 missions, and I've only done 6 missions other than the main one. But now I gotta do 4 more, and they are tedious. They range from tedious to annoying to near impossible, given my hand-eye gaming skills. There's a particular mission with the Riddler that I've gotten 9 of 10 missions done, and I only have to get 10 to capture the Riddler and save Catwoman. And I know, I can actually hear vaginas of my female listeners drying up at a frightening rate. But I tried for an hour last week to pass a 90-second mission, and I just was not good enough at driving the car. Grand Theft Batman. I wasn't good enough. I almost got there a couple times, but then I'm relying too much on luck. I'm not a skilled enough video game car driver. Righteous Girlfriend often just will see me playing a game involving a car and just be like, my God, I don't know anything about games, but I know you suck. And I agree. I agree. So I thought I was going to finish it this morning. So I captured the Penguin. And it was like, boom, let's hit this. And then it was like, I thought it meant I needed to capture 5 villains. So I was like, well, I've captured 4 already. Here's the 5th. But it meant I have to capture 5 more. So now I'm down to 4 more missions to finish. And I'm like, I hate this fucking game. But, you know, now I have to complete it. I have to finish it and complete it. And then take it outside and roll over it with a steamroller. Like those pastors who would destroy... Who would destroy... rap records in the early 90s. Oh, hey, Cookie, thanks. Your timing is impeccable, you silly golden bitch. But I, sometimes she doesn't like it when I close the door. Hey, Cook's Bear, you want to come in here? Say hi to the podcast? Clickety-clack, don't talk back. So, that's where I am in the gaming world. But I hadn't played games in years and thought, I want to get back to these games. I have all these good games that I really wanted to play. And then just between saving the nation with comedy and having 2 jobs and wanting to read a lot and get back into fitness, something, you know, 4 hours of games a day just fell by the wayside. It's amazing that between sleep and streaming and work and other work and trying to not die of diabetes, games, just, you don't have the time for them. But I've made time, because priorities are priorities, people. And Cookie is lying right by my feet like a good girl. That's fun. And let's do some motherfucking reviews of stuff, right? That's what you're... I don't know why you're here, to be honest. But another plug, gotta say it. If you're not listening to Making Podcasts Great Again, you gotta listen to that. And if you're not listening, if you're not a Patreon subscriber, give it a chance this month. I think you'll be satisfied. Because if you know one thing, I'm a proud man. You know, proud like the way they call Native American chiefs proud in books before you turn the page, and it was like, and then the tribe was slaughtered and the chief was castrated by an angry white settler and burned alive while his genitals used to be bled out. He was a proud man. Like, I feel like that's me in comedy. He's a proud comedian. He did things the right way right before his soul was molested by the industry. Anyhow, 2 things I've watched recently. Well, first of all, let's talk about Gamora. Okay, I am closing in on finishing out season 3 of Gamora, the Italian drama, the critically acclaimed popular Italian drama that is now an HBO Max property. I'm enjoying it, obviously. I've been crushing, you know, now because I have work again and the Righteous Girlfriend is back from family vacation, so she wants to watch her shows and sometimes use the TV, and it's like, God damn it. But, so now that just means when I wake up, you know, insomnia is fully back. Like, I am sleeping horribly. But you get up at 5:30, you pour a cup of coffee, and you say, well, I'm going to watch an episode of Gamora. Well, you know, I watch, like the U.S. military says, I watch more content before most people, you know, I watch more content before 9 a.m. than most people do all day. But Gamora is really good. But I got some questions for Italians. They're very machismo people. But it's very different from like Latin machismo. Latin machismo is like, don't touch me. I'm not a morricón or whatever. Cabrón, by the way. I don't know. Can non-Latin people say cabrón? Because when I'm reading like subtitles on things like Narcos, cabrón seems to be the Spanish N-word because of its versatility. It can mean my homie. It can mean this homosexual, this bitch ass, this punk, this asshole, or my boy, my man, how are you, buddy? So it feels like cabrón is the Latin N-word, except Latinos love to use the N-word as well. So I don't know what you like is like. I assume they don't have exclusivity. Like, I assume me saying cabrón is not violating any sort of ethnic dividing line, since so many Latin people are so liberal with the N-word. I don't think they have any standing to go, you can't say cabrón, that's our word. Essay. Can I say essay? I'm mixing and matching different groups of Latin people, I think. Maybe I'm not. Who knows? Who knows? I don't think they get to be as sensitive because they use the N-word, okay? There has to be some kind of trade-off for that. I'm enjoying Gamora, but Latin guys seem to, Italian guys in this show, and Italians seem to have the same sort of machismo of Latin guys, but it's much more incongruent, because there's lots of man kissing. You kiss your mom on the lips, you touch everybody's face, like COVID in Italy. No wonder it's spread. If Gamora is accurate to Italian culture, no wonder COVID spread so rapidly in 2020 in Italy. It's like everybody kisses everybody on the cheek. You kiss your mom on the mouth. You grab every person by the face. Now there's close talking in shows because you have to block for the cameras. You have to have a certain angle. So a lot of acting takes place very close face to face. But even by that standard, there is a lot of practically nose-to-nose conversations going on. And I think maybe that's cultural, not just done for TV blocking, but for, yes, in Italy, we talk close, we breathe on each other. It's kind of like a Steve Van Sant, Bruce Springsteen, the way they sing so close to the mic. You're like, are they going to make out during this rendition of Girls in Their Summer Clothes? And that's sort of how these guys talk in the show. Just let me grab your face. Mom, I kiss you on the lips. My friend, I kiss you on both cheeks. My enemy, I kiss you on both cheeks and then touch your face to let you know I might kill you or that I don't respect you or that you're a kid. And by the end of like an episode, everybody's got COVID and possibly like some sexually transmitted disease because of just how close everybody always is. But, I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the show. It really makes every other show seem unrealistic because just about nobody survives for long at all, which makes sense when you're dealing in a fucking vicious, crime-ridden, poverty sort. But it's like, you know, by The Wire stand, like The Wire, it would be like, oh my God, at the end of episode 10, one of the main characters dies. It's like Gamora's like, at the end of episode 10, all but two characters were already dead. And it's intense. It's good, though. It's good TV, so I recommend it. And another thing, and I'm doing a Thor rewatch, by the way. I watched Thor 1, Avengers 1, and last night Thor 2. So I'm doing all this so that I can honestly appraise Thor 4 and destroy it, hopefully. I hope to be able to destroy it and people's dreams and love of Marvel on... But I will say Avengers 1 was really good. I think I underrated it a little bit, even though I didn't enjoy it. I think what happens is people, you know, they always come for the king. When a new comic book movie comes out, they come for the Dark Knight, which is just, it shows you the true GOAT status of the Dark Knight, because nobody ever says, I think this was even better than Black Panther. I think this was even better than Captain America 2 Winter Soldier. I'm naming other critically acclaimed comics. I think this was even better than Guardians of... No. Every time there's a really good one or one that people think is good, they go, better than The Dark Knight? Which just tells you that it's the standard, which is sort of proof positive of its GOAT status. Is The Batman better than... That was my favorite when people were like, is The Batman better than The Dark Knight? I was like, is a piece of cheesecake from the Cheesecake Factory... Well, let me make it correct. Is a pool of diarrhea better than a piece of cheesecake from the Cheesecake Factory? That's how absurd comparing The Batman and The Dark Knight is. It's just absurd. But every time somebody likes something, they have to go to the Dark Knight. That, which is just an acknowledgement, whether you agree or not, it's the standard, which to me is good enough to consider it the GOAT. And also the fact that I saw it 8 times, well, 10 times in the theater, if you count like 10th anniversary shit. And in the first run of The Dark Knight, I saw it 8 times. I was single, had broken up with a fiance that summer. So I took 4 different ladies to second dates to The Dark Knight, in case you haven't heard that story before. It's an oldie but goodie by J.L. Oh, do you want to see a movie? Well, I hear The Dark Knight's pretty good. Oh, let's go see that. Hell yeah. Wow, JL, it's only our second date. Why is your penis out in the theater? Because I really like The Dark Knight. Don't play yourself, girl. This is a second date. I don't even know if I like you yet. I've seen The Dark Knight more than I've seen you. So let me just have this, okay? God, don't kink shame. I thought you were progressive. Jeez. Anyway, that was my 2008 summer. Me and Obama were just crushing it. Just thin, charismatic, biracial men having the summer of our lives. And it all went south from there. So Gamora, very good. Recommend it. I'm not dedicated enough or attention to detail enough to do like a recap show, because I almost thought about making that part of the Patreon. But I'm like, I don't remember most characters' names anymore. You know, it took me like 3 seasons of Game of Thrones, a show I love, before I was like, you know, the little guy. You know, the handsome blonde guy. You know, the giant. Like, it was... It took me many seasons to just be like, oh, now I can speak of their names. Like, I'm not trying to be dismissive. I love the show. But you just start to go, like, that guy. Or I just name people by their act. Like, I name the actor before I name the character. But Gamora is good stuff. So I recommend it if you haven't gotten on it. But my other recommendation, which many of you might already be on, but over this weekend we watched season 2 of Hacks on HBO Max. Boy, do I love that show. I liked season 1. I thought season 1 was like, Gene Smart was great. I thought it was a very sort of competent, enjoyable show. And I really think they made season 2 much better. And I don't mean that as like there was so much room to improve. It's just funnier. And I know there was an article in the New York Star Ledger about, what's his name? I'm not good with names. His last name is Downs. But he's one of the co-creators. He created the show with his wife and a comedy writer. And he plays the agent of Gene Smart's character, Deborah Vance, the one name I remember on the show. And he has a bigger role this season. And some, you know, I think it takes a level of confidence to sort of be like, I'm doing what's best for the show, even if it also is what's best for me as an actor. But he's directed several episodes. He's one of the co-creators and writers, and he's also a big co-star. And there's much more of him on this season, but it works. And I think that's cool, because some people might be insecure of like, you know, I think it would work, but people will think I'm trying to like pimp myself out or make the show about me. But the fact is, if you're good, if you really bring something to the table, then have confidence in that you will make the show better, that you don't have to worry about people thinking you're doing something, because the proof will be in how funny the show is when you're in it. But I really thought season 2 was great. There was so much good comedy stuff. Now, the irony is, you know, I felt like I related to several things that Deborah Vance was going through, but on my level, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, it feels like it would be easier to deal with being underappreciated or losing your momentum if you were already worth like, you know, $40 million and had a successful career. But I think something in the comedy mindset is like, you always want to be relevant. You always want to be developing things, or selling, you know, in the case of many comics, just playing the algorithm, being a total fucking hack sellout, but whatever it takes to stay relevant. But artistically, it shows her pivoting to like a new style and really working out the material, and how even if somebody of that star level, it's not easy to do that. And you know, I don't know if any of the writers are stand-up comics. I think Paul Downs, that's his name. And I'm only mentioning him. I'm not trying to erase the 2 women who also co-created the show. Okay, I see you. I hear you. I'm turning into Cory Booker. I see you, women writers whose names I don't know. I think one is Jen Statsky, which is like a name I've seen before, which is what I remember, but I don't remember Paul Down's wife. But her name, but the articles were about him because he's from Jersey. And, he did start as a stand-up comic, but like not so much. His background didn't seem to be so much steeped in stand-up comedy that he could know so much and be so on point with some of the struggles of stand-up comedy. But it's very, maybe one of the other writers is somebody more steeped in it, but it's, you know, it's very good and relatable as a comedian, even though of course the level of success and fame is totally different. But I just thought season two was, all due respect to like other good comedies that people like, Abbott Elementary, Ted Lasso, but if I had a vote right now, I think I'd have to vote season two Hacks as like the comedy of the year. I may be forgetting something, but I think Atlanta was really good. Season three of Atlanta was really good. I really enjoyed, like, I thought that was, so for me, it would be like Atlanta or Hacks, and maybe tiebreaker to Hacks just because it hits me harder. But there was some, I don't know. Maybe it's recency bias, but I would say in a year of some very strong comedies, I would say it would have to be between Hacks and Atlanta for me, all due respect to the other shows that are good and people like. But, oh, and the other thing. Okay, bonus review. I almost forgot because I'm going to review it for the Trump podcast Patreon as well. But you get my personal take on this movie. Elvis. Baz Luhrmann's Elvis. It's not going to be for everybody because the director has a very distinct, frenetic, colorful style. Like I remember the movie Any Given Sunday, Oliver Stone's sort of NFL proxy movie. I remember reading something that was like, it was like the most edit. It had like so many cuts, like everything was just like cut, like to give you that hectic on field feeling and intensity throughout the movie. But the Baz Luhrmann movie, it's got to be exhausting to edit his movies and to be in his movies, because I guarantee they're just like, I need you to walk on this stage 10 different times so we can get 10 different angles so that we can cut it. But it's a biopic. It's like a very stylized biopic of Elvis. And I thought it was, I'm not saying it was as good as Top Gun Maverick, but those are the two movies I've seen in the theater in the last several months. I saw Everything Everywhere All at Once in a smaller theater, and that was a good movie. I don't know if I'm on board with everybody who thinks it's like the greatest movie. And part of it is because there's too much multiverse shit. I think Marvel's get out of jail card for like, oh, we'll just do the multiverse and then we can bring back everybody and like kill all our storylines to death and all our characters like into the ground until only the truly brain dead are not bored of what we're doing. But Elvis gave me almost the same kind of feeling as Top Gun Maverick. Like, man, I'm glad I'm seeing this in the theater. This is a movie. You may not like it, but this is an ambitious movie. Big screen, ambitious movie in its own way. Like as much as a biopic can be like big and ambitious and flashy, you know, Top Gun is easier movie to make it that way because it's a big stunt and not special effects, but you know, high speed jets and shit like that. I don't know if you call that special effects, but because it's not, it's like not green screen. It's like people really flying fucking jets. But in its own way, I thought Elvis, and I know some of it will turn people off, but I realized Baz Luhrmann, I haven't seen, oh, what was his first movie? Strictly Ballroom, I think I was told, which I just remember hearing about. It was like, I think it might have been a Miramax movie, but it was like a indie, like a big hit indie movie, I think. That, I believe, was his first movie. Then he did Romeo and Juliet, which Righteous Girlfriend loves, the Leonardo DiCaprio, Claire Danes. I never saw it, but I know a lot of people who really liked it. And then he did Moulin Rouge, which is like a movie I've seen. And then I saw the musical on Broadway, and I definitely like the movie better. But that's where I had to sort of, the same way I talk about certain directors having a style, where like Wes Anderson, I respect that he has a style. I like that. I like that fact that he has crafted artistically a signature. A lot of people like his movies. I generally don't. They're too quirky. They feel like too self-congratulatory for their indie quirkiness. But at the same time, I respect that he is an artist a real artist. I just don't like his art, but I respect that he is not some carbon. He has created a unique thing that a lot of people like, and that you can tell it's a Wes Anderson product. Tim Burton is like that too. I like more Tim Burton movies than I do Wes Anderson movies, but Tim Burton's another director like that. Like Christopher Nolan has, you know, David Fincher, maybe the best combo of like somebody who makes, kind of has a signature style and makes really great movies for the most part. But like Moulin Rouge is one of those ones where I kind of liked some of it. It ends very dreary, but it was this, I understood why it was nominated for Best Picture. It was like probably the type of movie that it had no chance of winning Best Picture, but probably 20% or 15% of Oscar voters were like, that was my favorite movie of the year, because it was just a big, adventurous, ambitious feast. And then he made Great Gatsby, which didn't get great reviews, and I actually liked it. I liked his DiCaprio Gatsby remake because I hated the fucking book, The Great Gatsby. I think I read it twice in high school for different classes. Hated the book, saw the Robert Redford movie, hated the fucking the movie, even more than the book. And then I saw I think this was like a needed update. I think it conveyed it gave an upbeat flair to like the Gilded Age. And I just thought it was like, I ended up enjoying that much more. And Elvis is probably my favorite movie that he's done now. But I know that it won't be for everybody because of his style choices and the chaotic editing. But the star of it, I think his name is Austin Butler. Really strong performance. Tom Hanks, I don't know what Colonel Tom Parker. He seemed like kind of a fat, gay penguin, like from the Batman, to bring it all back to Batman content. He seemed like a fat, gay penguin. And I guess he was from the Netherlands or something, so he had a weird accent. I absolutely respect Tom Hanks for going all in, like committing to this weird fat suit accent character, because you don't see Tom Hanks do that a lot. So it's nice to see a star who could just be Tom Hanks for $10 million a movie for the rest of his life. But he decided to be kind of a weird, creepy, eccentric character villain. It's weird, but to quote Hansel, I don't listen to Sting. I respect Sting. Sting's a real hero of mine. I don't listen to any of his music, but he's making it, and I respect that. That's kind of how I feel about Tom Hanks's choice as Colonel Tom Parker, Elvis's like corrupt manager. But I'm a fan of I like Elvis's music. And there was a great documentary a few years ago on HBO, which is available on HBO Max. I think it's called The Searcher. I really liked the choices Baz Luhrmann made in making the movie. And yeah, that and Top Gun, I feel like so far are great choices for like getting me back in the movie theater. Not just because they're not Marvel movies, but you know, just they felt like big screen movies. And that the directors and actors put a lot of effort and care and creativity into it. So yeah, I definitely recommend Elvis, but with the caveat that I tried to give you the rundown of as much Baz Luhrmann as I know, but with the caveat, you may not like what he's doing, but you may love, I think he's that kind of filmmaker where it's like, this movie's good enough that I think even people turned off by the style will be like, it was pretty good. It wasn't my favorite. It wasn't great. But that people who dig the style will think it's a fucking masterpiece. But yeah, that's it. That's it, guys. I think we've made it through an episode fairly positive. So not afraid of cutting an episode short to avoid depression. But yeah, I hope to see you guys, any of my Boston people, I hope to see you in Boston on Friday. Early show, so I guess we can all hang out at the bar or whatever. No need to run home right away. Saturday I'm in Boston, hopefully hanging out with friends, and then coming home Sunday, and then I'll write you a road recap for the blog. But then God knows what's going to happen to my comedy career after this. It's here now, the potential finale, kind of. But who knows? you know, half blackface. Like I said to the Righteous Girlfriend when we were walking a couple days ago, I said half blackface. It's as remote as the possibilities are. I believe in myself. I believe in the material. And it hasn't been rejected yet. I haven't put it out yet. I haven't hired a publicist yet. So there's always that mathematical, whether it's a 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 1,000,000,000, there's still a chance. So as I always say on this podcast, I'm still in it, so I'm in it. I'm not halfway in it. But when I'm out, I got to be out. But I'm not out. I'm in. So we'll see what the fuck happens with that. But I hope you had a good weekend. I hope you all are good. I appreciate you listening. Please check out the Patreon if you haven't. It's, you know, it's a good time to try it out. You know, every month goes by, there's more content piling up, so you'll have more to sample. If you decide to join this month, you can get, you know, 3 months worth of stuff, and then maybe you say, hey, you know what, this is fun. I like JL's comedy, and if he's going to keep pumping out some funny exclusive stuff, I'll stick around for $4 or $7. So that's it, guys. Enough plugs, enough nonsense. Let me go see if I have work. Hopefully not. I hate that Batman video game, and I appreciate all of you. So thanks for listening. Have a great week. Hope to see some of you in Boston. And for those of you that don't, I will see you next Tuesday.